good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. My name is Phil Vacchio.
Hello, Phil.
Good morning, Dave.
Phil and I are two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm, and some combo of Phil and myself or Jay Marie are here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law, everything from basic wills and powers of attorney, super important, by the way, power of attorney, into trusts and long-term care at home or elsewhere, Medicaid applications and client care and all that.
All the above.
It's a call-in show. You can reach us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you want to see Phil in one of our four offices in Albany, Saratoga, up in Queensbury, down in Kingston, he'll go. He said last week.
If I'm forced to.
If he's forced to.
For special requests only.
And I'll go. I don't need to be forced. Yeah. You can call us in the office at 518-465-7581. Phil Vacchio, how are you?
I'm doing well.
How's the doggy? How's Boone?
Boone's great. He's acclimated to the family. He fits right in.
Yeah.
Kids love him. Everyone loves him. So.
And how's the cat?
She's still in the basement.
Okay.
She hasn't come out yet. Very rarely. So.
We need a wellness check for the cat. What's the name of the cat?
Hazel.
Hazel and Boone.
Hazel and Boone.
Sounds like a great
pair.
Yeah.
That is a pair.
Can make a movie. What are those?
Solving mysteries in the.
Remember those 90 movies when the dogs could talk and the animals, like Homeward Bound? Have you seen that?
That wasn't in my sweet spot.
Past your time?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yes, I know.
I forget how you're a little bit older.
I'm a little older.
A little older, yeah.
Yeah. I remember Turner and Hooch. Is that what you're talking about?
Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays
Turner.
But
he didn't talk in that movie.
And then Hooch is played by a pit bull. Not pit bull, a bulldog.
No. I thought it was like a shaggy dog. I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, you're thinking of Beethoven.
No, I know that one.
So the dog, you got your schedule and everything's working out?
Yeah, pretty much, for the most part.
How many shifts have you taken over that previously were your son or your daughter?
Pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
All of them, I would say, unless they're specifically asked. So we're going to have to make that.
Oh, so funny when you were talking about how there's going to be this schedule and you're opting out of mornings. And I thought,
you laughed at me.
Sure
right
you are.
What about you, Dave? Those eyelids are looking heavy over there.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
It was a long...
Dave was in New York City about 7 hours ago. I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how I do it either.
What were you doing down there? Mets game?
You know what? Actually, it wasn't the Mets game. They lost 5-2
to
the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe...
So sad.
Cannot believe Phil walked in here with a Yankees hat, by the way.
Wow. Wasn't intentional.
Out of respect to you, Ben.
That's really bad.
It's just disrespectful to you.
It is disrespectful.
You just got to rub it in, guys. Fine.
But I was down there. My father received a lifetime award from his church or recognition.
Oh, how
for all
cool
his
is that?
Service.
That's great.
So
wow.
Went down there for it, and it was next to LaGuardia, which is okay. You know, one of the airports downstate, right?
You could have flew back.
I might have been faster. So you know, you gotta get there. And you know what else is next to LaGuardia? Citi Field, where the Mets and the Yankees were playing, and
right
it was a complete cluster.
Yeah.
Even getting back, and then, you know, they decided, you know, the powers that be at the MTA, that Friday night is the best time to get three lanes into one wherever we can on the Major Deegan.
Oh, no.
And so on. So
it's always a good time driving in that area.
Yeah.
Never fails.
But I'm energized now because I'm with you guys, and I have a wonderful topic for today, Phil.
Great.
And you've heard it. You've heard it a little bit.
A little bit.
And Ben, you've heard this before.
Okay.
But this is
are you
like
going to give me a Dave-ism right now?
No.
Okay. No Dave-ism
there might
on the
be
way,
more
I don't
stuff.
Think. Yeah.
So we had a client, Phil, that did a trust with us. And he signed everything several months ago, maybe December.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this trust because he wants to make sure his money goes to the right people. He wants to make sure he avoids probate. He wants to protect money in case he has long-term care needs. And he wanted to keep control. All things we like.
Some universal concerns, yeah.
Yeah, and so he did the Medicaid trust, right?
Okay.
The one that you talk about all the time, right?
Makes sense.
Accomplishes all those goals. And, you know, the way it works is that you're not your own trustee. You pick someone else to be the trustee. So he picked someone else to be the trustee. And it turns out that person said, I don't want to do it.
Oh,
okay.
So this is after it was signed?
After he signed it.
Okay.
Trustee hasn't signed it. She says, I'm out. find someone else. So he finds someone else. So we did like a re-signing of everything.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, we lost some time on the dates, but you know, the trust was never fully executed, the deed, you know.
Yeah.
So we had a meeting to just sign everything brand new, but we had a new trustee. And here's where the issues came up, Phil, because I think you've had this before.
Mm-hmm.
So trustee who is not a lawyer, so this person who's not a lawyer said to me five times in the meeting, I know I'm not a lawyer. I know I'm not an expert in this, but, and then he would proceed to say like the greatest hits of all the wrong things.
Okay.
And almost trying to convince the client to no longer do a trust that they have done and no longer do the things that the client is trying to do.
Yes.
It was like, I felt like there was like a hidden camera, Ben.
Yeah.
Where I was like, this can't be real.
You're just waiting for somebody to jump out and say, ha ha, we were just kidding.
Yeah, because it was like the most backwards things.
Yes.
For example, here was the one, and it was like right off the bat, and it really
set the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I don't think you want to do this trust. You really need to think about it because if you put any money in your trust, it's going to be a lot of work and you need to liquidate everything, all your stocks, all your CDs. You're going to lose so much money if you do this trust.
Yeah.
And so, Philip Vacchio, if someone, one of your clients creates a trust, and maybe it's not the Medicaid trust, maybe it's a revocable trust.
Whatever, right?
Whatever. When we talk about putting things into the trust, how does that work? Like, what does that all mean? Because it definitely doesn't mean you need to sell everything and have lots of taxes.
So this is a conversation we have at the onset of, you know, even at the consultation phase where we're talking about options. So, you know, in your scenario, we're at the second signing. And now this individual basically trying to undo all the education that you provided and provided alternate information, which is incorrect. So, I mean, that's one of the basic things, right? And that's a lot of one of the big things that keeps people away sometimes in misinformation about these types of trusts. In particular, the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, there is a lot of misconception that, hey, what I put in there, it's stuck in there. I can't manage it. I can't do anything
with it. Oh, we're not even there yet, though. We're not there. That's coming. So the first part was you're going to get all these taxes.
Oh, to get it into the trust, you mean?
Into the trust.
Ah, I see. All right, so I misunderstood.
We need to liquidate everything.
Right, so we're not even in the trust yet. So,
not in the trust.
Of course, not true. You know, you can do transfers in kind to the trust. You don't say you have things like real estate, or say you have an investment account with stocks and bonds and other investments in there. This individual you're referring to is basically telling the person, oh, you're going to have to sell all that and that's going to result in capital gains and this and that. No, we can simply do change of ownership and keep the assets invested or whatever form those assets are in. They can stay in that form and go into the trust. The only time we would have to liquidate anything to put it into a trust is if we're putting a retirement account into a trust, which we almost never
do.
We basically never do that. It doesn't make sense for tax purposes. And as a lot of our listeners know, retirement accounts already have some built-in protection for Medicaid purposes. All the other types of accounts, we can simply keep them in the form that they're in.
When you are thinking about doing a trust and you have a investment account, or you have a CD, or you have a home,
yeah,
and we're thinking of or a rental property, you are the beneficiary of that thing, right? You are the owner of it and you are the income beneficiary. If your CD, you're sitting home, you have a CD and that CD makes money, you make money, you report that money you made on your tax return, and that's how it works. That's how it works to own something. When you do the Medicaid trust in particular, because that's the one where there's a lot of misinformation, you are the beneficial owner of every single thing in that trust. And it means that if you put a house in, what does it mean to be a beneficial owner? It means I get to live in my house. I get to decide if I want to rent it. I can decide if I want it to be sold, right? You get to enjoy it. That's what it means to own something. If you are the beneficial owner of money, it means you get dividends and you get interest. You can decide that I don't want to have Apple stock anymore. I want to have Google stock, right?
Yeah.
You get to make some decisions about things. That's what it means to be beneficial owner. So before you do a trust and after you do a trust, if on both sides of this equation, you are, you know, entitled to interest and dividends, and you get to make these decisions, there are no tax consequences when we add things to a trust.
And it has to be a properly drafted, you know, when we talk a lot of times, we're talking from the perspective of the language that we use. The trust, of course, has to have the appropriate language to give us those powers to make sure there are no adverse tax consequences.
Yeah.
I've come across trusts that are poorly drafted in terms of meeting the client's intent. Maybe that says that the client's not entitled to income distributions and that it shouldn't have been that way because now that has tax consequences and the client does have less access. But for the trust that we create, you know, for most of the clients, we're trying to achieve the goals that you mentioned. All those things that you said are true. They're in the body of the trust. If you read the trust properly, you're going to see that the person has those rights.
They could guess who had not read the trust.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Obviously. Okay. He's talking in generic
terms.
And
it was like,
don't do trust because this and that, right?
But Phil, it was like every sentence was before every statement that was wrong, it was,
up.
I'm not the expert in it, but
yeah,
I'm pretty sure you're going to lose this, you're going to lose that, this is bad. And I'm just like raising my hand, I'm like, hey guys, so I am the expert in this? This is literally what I do every day?
Were there fists thrown or did
no,
you keep your cool,
no,
Dave?
No, no.
You stayed calm?
I just,
all the hair on his head stood up.
Oh, thank you, Ben. That's
every single strain.
So it was like, okay, let's just reset.
Yeah.
So we went to the very basics. Why did you do this trust? Why are we continuing with this trust? Yeah. What's the point of it? And it was, again, leave money. So the fact pattern was it's a second relationship.
Yeah.
There's kids from prior relationships. There's an intent to leave things to grandkids instead of children. There's some friends in the mix. There's a life use for spouse who's second spouse. Even like the who gets what wasn't your generic who gets
what.
Yeah,
there's a lot of goals you're achieving here for this client.
Right.
Yeah.
So, fine, I explain that there's zero tax consequences to adding these assets to the trust. We are not going to liquidate your investment portfolio. We can, as you mentioned, do a change of owner form and boom.
Yep.
Done. The next piece of it, as we're getting slowly to the break here, was about probate. It was, well, I don't see why you need to do a trust if the will's going to handle everything. And now, like, now my hair's on fire.
Yeah,
it's not just
all
stood
of it.
Up. All of my hair's on fire.
Yeah.
My eyebrows are on fire.
You look like a match.
Because it's like, oh my, no.
Yeah.
We are doing the trust to avoid the will, right? We don't want the will to be the big reason that things went to spouse and things went here and things went there. We want it to be that, you know, we got there. We got to Lake George, but we didn't take Route 9, right? We took the highway. I used that analogy. Did nothing. I was like, oh my God. I was
no,
like...
Didn't click at all.
You tried your best stuff and it wasn't working.
Well, it was...
Oh, man.
So sometimes people come in and they... And this goes for a lot of clients as well, Phil, where they come in because they want to learn and they want you to tell them...
Yeah, they're open-minded.
Your thoughts. You know, not to tell, for you to tell them what to do, but... for you to educate them. And other people, I think, come in to tell you how much they know.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between those two kinds of people.
That's right.
And you can't tell me otherwise.
We're going to talk more about the... Well, there's a lot more, actually.
Yeah.
So
great.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
This morning, Phil and I have been talking about an all-too-familiar situation where there is someone who is maybe going to be a trustee or a power of attorney. They don't know the ins and outs. They haven't gotten the education. They didn't have a consult with Phil for an hour.
Yeah.
They didn't, you know, talk to our great staff about, you know, any questions they have about their documents. They're kind of flying in. They're asked to be trustee, and they're saying all the wrong things about what they know about trusts.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get that someone comes in that's an outsider with the point of view of, don't listen to that attorney. They're trying to sell you something you don't need, or we know better.
So to that point for a moment, the client already did a trust. We're just tweaking some things.
Right, what's the ironic
part? We already
have
the deed signed. Like we're just like redoing something because there was a change in the trustee. We're not trying to make a buck here.
And
it's just keeping the plan the same as it was 3 months earlier when the client wanted all these things.
Out of curiosity, the client himself, was he one that was hard to break through to when you were educating him?
Not
or
at
he
all.
Seemed like he understood, he knew his goals, what you were achieving.
He got it all.
And
it was He kind of was just like a witness in the room, just like watching this back and forth. It was like a ping pong match.
Wasn't even participating. It's just this trustee guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause yes. Yeah. So then the next step, right. It wasn't just, well, you're going to liquidate everything to do this trust and it's not worth it, which is all wrong, by the way. You don't have to liquidate.
Right.
The next one was, well, your will's going to do all these things and the will is going to be so much easier than all this work that's going to need to be done as trustee. And I was like, oh my goodness.
It's literally the opposite of what is true.
So I explained what probate would look like. And if you don't mind, Phil.
Yeah.
So I mentioned second spouse. I mentioned kids from a previous relationship, an intent to leave money to grandkids. What would a probate look like? We got a house, we got a life use, we got all sorts of things going on.
Right. Like, it's funny, just a side note, I had a similar conversation with these clients recently, and they were telling me all these goals that they wanted, and there was a lot of goals, family properties and whatnot, and at the end, the guy goes, whatever just happened to a simple will? I was like, well, simple will is not going to achieve, even if we did a quote-unquote simple will,
right,
to achieve all these goals, they're going to have to be in the will as well. But in the will, it's going to be a more difficult version of achieving those goals. Because as we know, and our listeners know, when a will has to be used to control assets upon the death of someone because they weren't in a trust, or they didn't have beneficiaries, or they didn't have a joint owner, the will has to go through probate. Once again, the definition of probate is a court of competent jurisdiction validating a will and officially appointing an executor to act once someone dies. That's what probate
is. I usually don't explain probate that in those words.
No.
But yes.
Well, that's the technical.
I like it. I like
the
court. I never bring in the competent jurisdiction. I like that. I may start to do that.
It makes me sound smarter, dude.
Might be a good boat name, competent jurisdiction.
Oh, I like that one.
No.
That's
good. No, I don't think so. No.
So we have this will, someone passes away, and you know everything's going to be controlled by the will. And it will be controlled, but it has to go through that formal probate process. And in a case like how you're explaining it, where there is a second marriage,
there's more too that I forgot to tell you.
There's even more. Okay.
One of the beneficiaries is a daughter who's going to have money in trust for her because of some special needs stuff.
Up to see. All right. So there's even more components there.
Yeah. So we can do a will that says all the rules as to how we're going to get where we're going.
Correct.
That's going to have rules for second spouse, going to have rules for daughter that has special needs, going to have rules for grandkids that are going to get the most money out of the pie and, appropriate ages. You could have all of that in a will.
Sure.
There's nothing that's not an unbelievably complicated will. We can do that. No problem. I think the issue you're getting to, Phil, is that the way you get there is this will goes through court, competent jurisdiction, right? And so there's lots of signatures and paperwork. And even when that's easy, because I said, forget everyone signs when we need them to sign. We're talking about a 10-month process, 2 months or so to get the will in.
Yeah.
By law, 7 months on top, the will has to stay open. And this gentleman, the friend, the proposed trustee said,
here he comes.
Said, yeah, I don't think that's how it works, but sure, let's just move on. You're signing this. I think it sounds great. And I'm like,
I've only done hundreds of probates. Maybe more.
So I said, and I'm usually just like, ha ha ha, whatever. Right. I was like, I got to stop you there. So how do you think it works then? Like,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm telling you by law, by statute, the estate has to stay open for 7 months. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Zero sounds basis.
Good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Zero basis of support.
But it gets more complicated because, Phil, if you did a trust and you left money in trust for your kids, which you would, or if there was a need for language to hold money because of special needs that someone may have.
A disabled person, right? Okay.
If your trust lays all that out, right? That's one thing. If a will lays that out, when you name, you know, me as trustee of your kids, let's say, I become trustee because I was named by the courts.
Well, it adds another layer to the legal process.
So the actual job of me holding money for your kids is a little more complicated. The accountings are a little more complicated. I got to go through court every single year.
So you're not just applying for the what's called letters testamentary, right? That's the court order that appoints the executor. The executor of your will is the one that does the work to gather and distribute the assets. How you're describing it, there's another layer. There's another role presented in that will. You're nominating a trustee. Now, for that trustee to act, there also has to be letters of trusteeship. That's a court document that allows the trustee to act.
Yeah.
That's the first part of that legal, you know, additional legal work. And then, like you said, there's court oversight. There are required accountings. There are additional administrative costs that are going to be paid by this trust.
So, Phil, literally during this meeting, I was just trying to figure out, what's this guy's angle? Is he looking to just get more commissions or something? Because there's no rational reason to voluntarily go through the court to get to the same place.
Was this individual a beneficiary as well?
No.
Or just the,
no.
Yes. Like, what is the
bystander?
Yeah.
Well. I don't know. but I think it was just to have a discussion and challenge whatever.
We know people like that. They like to be adversarial.
Well, so fine. We're doing our client's proceeding with it. And the client was just, again, like, I should have given him popcorn because he was just like looking back and forth. You know, his neck hurt from the, it's like watching a tennis match.
Did you say you may want to reconsider your trustee appointment?
No, I didn't.
I did
after the gentleman left, but that's different, of course. So the next piece of the infuriating puzzle was about funding the trust. So a trust is only as good as what you put in it. We don't want you to put everything in it. We want you to enjoy your life. But there are monies that, you know, we can have access to because it's a Medicaid trust in general, big, you know, capital C control, where the money's working for you, invested for you, and, you know, through something called the partial revocation, actually available in the general
necessary
sense.
Yeah.
And the gentleman has quite a bit of money, not so much money we could spit in the face of long-term care, but enough money where we probably put in like $1 million worth of stuff
into the trust
and leave out several hundred thousand dollars of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's good income. There's, you know, plenty of money. And the discussion then moved to what to put into the trust. And I was like, hey, I'm thinking you probably put, you know, about $1 million in there because you're going to leave out all this money and you have retirement and all these things pointing. And if there's money in the trust, you're still the beneficiary of the money. You still get the interest and dividends and all that. And again, concerned, you know, friend / about to be trustee was like, I would do the opposite. I would leave $1 million out. And not only, but you want to put a couple hundred grand in that, that's fine. And this goes back to, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Right? We're doing this to try to protect money because the client has expressed a desire to try to protect money. And the way the trust works is that it only protects money if the money is in the trust. It only protects your house if your house is in the trust. You don't do a Medicaid trust and then, you know, put $5 in it.
Yeah.
You don't put everything in it, right? You don't put everything in it. But we got to, you know, we got to stick to the plan here. Measure twice, cut once, Phil. We come up with a plan together as to, if you do a trust, what's going to go in? More importantly, what's going to stay out, right? How do you use your money? What money do you have at your fingertips?
Those are all important factors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and how are we going to achieve this client's goals to the best of our ability and, you know, what they want? And, of course, like you say, you don't want to overfund the trust, but you also don't want a missed opportunity because you can't just say, well, we'll see how it goes in 5 years and I'll add a bunch more. While you can do that, you're 5 years older at that point, right?
Yeah.
And when we're talking about protecting assets, we all know there's important timelines, and I don't know how old this gentleman was per se or what his health was like, but we want to generally get the clock ticking on as many of the assets as we can.
A youngish, lower 80s.
Okay. So up there in age, we're at a point in life where things could happen quickly, right?
Well, there was a reason we were doing a trust to begin with and a Medicaid trust. And if nothing else, it was to avoid probate. You want to talk about maybe this isn't the right kind of trust? I'm with you. You want to talk about, you know what, I just have money and maybe I'll avoid probate in other ways? I'm with you. you tell me I need rules for my daughter who has special needs. Okay, yeah, let's have a document that does it. You're going to tell me probate is preferable to a trust. You lost me.
Well, and I think it's important that for people to understand that how powerful of a tool it is that there are loopholes where we can get funds out if we need to, right? It's not I'm making a mistake that I put too much in and I can never rectify that if things don't go as planned. Like you said, there's a partial revocation. There's some other techniques we can use to get funds out if we need to. And in a situation like his, that probably won't happen how you've described it.
Yeah. So how about, have you heard this one before? Someone's got a lot of money. They don't spend any of it and they just accumulate more money over and over and
every
over.
Day.
So I said to them, I said, you want to get crazy? Leave $300,000 out of your trust. And we know if the worst case happens and bad timing and nursing homes and oh my goodness, yeah, we're going to lose some money,
yeah.
But we're not going to lose as much as we would if we had nothing in the trust, right? Like, fund it appropriately. Stick, you know, I like these broad strokes, Phil. Like, what are the motivations? What are we trying to accomplish? Let's not overcomplicate it. Leave plenty out if that's going to get it done. And, you know, sometimes there are outside parties, and I don't think this guy meant ill.
No,
like, I don't think he was argumentative just to be it. I just don't think he was open to listening to the actual way that things work. And I don't blame people for thinking irrevocable means something that it doesn't mean, or that people think that wills, you know, are better than trust. I get it. I understand why you may come into the office thinking that, Phil. I don't understand how you leave the office thinking that.
Well, sometimes it's based on life experience too, right? Let's say this gentleman was a beneficiary of a trust in another state, and he just knows things were a mess, and he was the beneficiary, meaning he wasn't involved in the distribution of it, but he thinks because of his negative experience, this is how it is, right? There's so many situations that someone can build up these misconceptions, but the fact that you won't listen, and you know, that's frustrating.
Yeah. So what happened? We ended up signing everything. The trustee is trustee, and off we go. And for me, it was like I'm used to smoother meetings and certainly a smoother re-signing. And I think it forces us to up our game to make sure we are explaining things the right way. Believe me, I was driving home thinking like, maybe I wasn't explaining something the right way. And I was like, no, I did only normal stuff.
You know what you do all the time, right? And you would know that you built this plan around the client's needs.
I didn't even do toasters or ovens. I didn't even go there.
You didn't go there. No analogies.
No, it was.
Wow.
We did the Lake George one, the highway.
That one.
Yeah.
You go the highway or you go Route 9 or.
Yeah. And it's not even a good analogy because Route 9 is great.
It is great.
You know?
Yeah, you got to use some
downstate roads.
It's just a little
trip.
Or something.
Yeah. It's like we're going to take the Major Deegan to the Triborough to the Van Wyck to get to LaGuardia like I did yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that does not sound enjoyable.
Yeah.
So the client left. The client was happy. The client was satisfied with what was done.
Yeah, so trustee left, and I said to the client, because, you know, we get along, and I've known them for over a year at this point. Like, I got to tell you, this is the first time I've ever had such an adamant opposition with, like, hitting literally each and every one of the myths that, you know, you do the Medicaid myths presentations, estate planning myths. Hit them all. I was like, again, I was like, where's the camera?
Did he leave in a huff? Like, how did, when he left?
No, there was a handshake and a look in the eye all good.
All right. It's the best case version of the end there.
I don't know. Have a nice weekend, guys.
Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.